and welcome back. This is episode 18 of The Daily Buddhism, and I'm your host, Brian Schell. I have just a couple of quick announcements to get out of the way today. First, I'm now on Twitter. I'm not completely sure what it's good for yet, but I'm in the process of playing around with it. And if you'd like, you can go to twitter.com/dailybuddhism and click on follow to follow me. I'll do a return follow on anyone who does. If you don't know what Twitter is, it's something like a huge message board or chat room with many very tiny messages. It's kind of hard to describe, but from their FAQ, Twitter is a service for friends, family, and coworkers to communicate and stay connected through the exchange of quick, frequent answers to one simple question: what are you doing? Okay, well again, it's just something I'm playing with. Let's give it a try and see if we can have some fun with it if you'd like. Next, an update on the donation situation. I did get a few more donations this week, and I can finally say that the studio microphone I bought way back around episode 7 is now paid off. For the next Daily Buddhism investment, I want to get a voicemail phone number so you guys can call in with your questions and I can play your comments on the air. I think it would make the show much more entertaining and would allow more people to ask questions. Not everyone wants to type up an email question. So if you've thought about sending in a donation, it's not too late to help out. Thanks for all your previous help support so far, and keep up the good work. And now, on with the show. See, first thing Monday, we had a letter from a reader. Not so much a question as just an insightful comment. But this was in response to the "So You Want to Be a Buddhist" post from a few weeks back. And was in response to someone else's question, "What do you do to become a Buddhist?" This reader wrote, "I was once fortunate enough to have a very unintentional and random encounter with a Dalai Lama. He pretty much stepped out of a vehicle in front of me at a Tibetan festival in D.C. some years back. He allowed me a very intimate moment with him, and I sort of asked him the question you just posed here with my one question. He told me, 'Just learn compassion.' I have faltered many times. I have struggled to make the genuine step from cognition of the path to actually walking it. As I have improved, I did find that focusing my practice on compassion for all beings fosters genuine but subtle transformation. Remember, compassion for all beings includes yourself. Don't beat yourself up so much. Fundamental change, and this is what this is for so many of us, is a long walk. This is not religious magic, and the sooner you give up the salvation mindset, the better. Buckle in and stay put. Ignore counting the mile markers and let go of this pressure that is only making things harder for you." And my response to this letter was, compassion is big. Everything you say here is absolutely true. Especially like your phrase, "This is not religious magic." Which leads us directly into the next topic. Now we're going to talk about whether Buddhism is a faith or not. A reader recently wrote, "I was born a Baptist. I never understood such a claim, for there was never a choice. This began in the crib. Something about belief, without evidence, just never set correctly with me. The man of cloth, in Sunday school, brought reassurance to my disbelief. I asked him to respect the invisible box around us. My box should never occupy his. He thought otherwise and claimed, 'The Lord is with me.' To this, I was clear in my reply. But neither you or he have the right to be with me without an invitation. And that was some 20 years ago, but every scar holds pretty certain memories. That was when my belief in God received its second strike. We're a baseball nation, so it's 3 strikes and you're out. His third came when I died in my car accident, giving a prayer both in desperation and hope. Not for me. Hope for myself hadn't worked before, and now there were others at risk. I prayed that he would take my soul for any others of my passengers, if not all. As you may guess, it failed to be granted. After the first strikes against God, I'd already begun slowly researching other beliefs. Little less than a month till my 17th birthday is when the accident occurred. The coma, then 5 years of rehab, held me from my research. Zen, Tao, Qi, all still interest me. But claims of faith to any of them, without any clearness as to what belief in would entail, held me weary. As I listened to one of the first two lessons I downloaded, you did answer what belief in Buddhism would require as practice, meditation. If there's more, please direct this lost puppy in a wheelchair to the titles which will make his belief in Buddhism clear. And my response to that. As for your question about practice and what you should do, first, meditation is important, yes, but it's not everything. That's only for your own benefit. Secondly, even more important is proper behavior towards yourself and others. I did some lessons about the five precepts, which are the rules of Buddhism. This was episode 7 if you have the older shows. If you look through the list of the five rules, it should be pretty obvious that they're intended to be practical and useful in real life. They may not necessarily be fun, but it's hard to argue that they're good rules. And that's pretty much it if you want to be a decent Buddhist. You can do more, of course. Third, Buddhism is at its heart an internal, mental thing. That's why meditation is emphasized so much. But reading and learning more about the ideas of Buddhism can only help you in your life, so it can be and should be a continuous process of learning. Really, the bottom line of Buddhism is that it's not about faith. It's about practicality and reason. You can see for yourself that the precepts are for your benefit and the benefit of others, not for the benefit of some invisible God. After you've been meditating regularly for some time, you'll see real benefits with that as well. It may take some time, but you'll get there. But you don't need to believe anything in Buddhism. Try these things, and you will see the results. It's real. It's practical. Now, depending on what you read, Buddhism can be wrapped up inside a lot of mystical mumbo-jumbo. And that, in my opinion, is the main reason Buddhism is not more popular in the West. And it was my main goal in creating the Daily Buddhism, to make it accessible to everyone without the jargon and technical talk. And that letter really opened up a can of worms about the precepts. I had a few interesting posts later on this week on the website concerning the fifth precept, which is, I undertake the training rule to abstain from drinking and drugs that cause heedlessness. Well, that seems pretty straightforward, and in ancient times it probably was as simple as it seems. But is it still valid? And a reader recently wrote, I have to disagree with the notion that this precept is telling the practitioner to abstain from all drugs. The best medical studies show that moderate amounts of alcohol and caffeine have beneficial consequences. Why should Buddhist precepts contradict new discoveries in science? If Buddhism is about reality and its true nature, I think it's time to live the spirit of the precept, which is avoid that which for you could lead to heedless behavior, rather than the letter. This would mean a person with a genetic predisposition towards addiction or heedlessness might have to weigh the benefits versus obstacles of drinking or using a drug much more carefully than one who can easily handle, say, a glass of wine every day, especially if prescribed by a doctor, or an occasional marijuana joint. Also, you said this precept even covers caffeine, but weren't Zen Buddhist monks known for their use of green tea? In short, this precept seems to be more about avoiding heedlessness, not about which substances you choose to use. Under a strict reading of the precept, even chocolate contains a drug that could lead to heedlessness. I think the key focus should be on one's behavior subsequent to taking a drink or drug. If the behavior leads to suffering, then stop using something. If not, then why stop? Okay, I think that letter gets perilously close there to justifying personal behavior. But my response to the letter was, I am personally still not convinced about the benefits of alcohol that some studies have shown. I think that the tendency to overdo it outweighs any small potential health benefits. It's just too easy to start down the path to a real addiction problem. And of course, that's just my opinion. And he said, this precept seems to be more about avoiding heedlessness, not about which substances you choose to use. And no, I absolutely disagree on this. It specifically mentions intoxicants. There's no vagueness about it. I think in this case it's very clear that they mean intoxicant-induced heedlessness. General sober stupidity is a whole other matter entirely, and there are plenty of prohibitions against that sort of foolishness in all the wisdom literature of Buddhism. And I personally don't drink alcohol or take any kind of non-medicinal drugs. I do, however, love my caffeine, whether in coffee or soda. And I see very little harm in it, but I can see where it might affect concentration while meditating. I'm not going to justify it. I know it's not the optimum situation. Someday I may choose to work on breaking that habit, but right now I see bigger problems that I need to focus on. As with everything in Buddhism, it's up to you to work out what is best for you. It's not for me to condemn imbibing occasionally in small quantities. The precept itself is pretty clear on the subject. But if science were to unequivocally prove that small amounts were good for you, then Buddhism would adapt its rules to allow it. Or maybe not in this case, since it still can lead to addictions. It's a complex subject. But it didn't end there. That reader responded again, saying, you wrote, I personally don't drink alcohol or take any kind of non-medicinal drugs. I do, however, love my caffeine, whether in coffee or soda. By the same token, I see little harm in drinking a glass of wine that has been recommended by my personal physician. We never see harm in taking that with which we are comfortable. Plus, the precept is a 2,500-year-old suggestion, not a commandment. While the wisdom of not abusing drugs cannot be argued, the people who promulgated this precept knew little about the effects of intoxicants compared to modern research. And, I have to add, there is some vagueness, in a sense, about the precept given that it is so old. Very few ancient sayings have survived intact, so we really don't know how it was originally presented. Ask any Bible scholar. The best we can do is ask, does it make sense given what we know? When we close the book and say no further discussion, or, in this case it's very clear, we risk making Buddhism into a fundamentalist religion. Obviously, this case is not very clear, or this disagreement would not exist. Also ask yourself, if green tea was okay for ancient Zen practitioners, why should you worry about trying to quit caffeine? Science has unequivocally proven that small amounts of alcohol are beneficial. Therefore, my Buddhism has adapted. This is not my opinion. Several studies over a number of years have shown the benefits of moderate alcohol in fighting heart disease, and with wine, increasing antioxidants. Granted, overuse is unhealthy, but that is true in the use of any natural substance, food, alcohol, drugs, plants, etc. My 21st century adaptation of this precept is, I undertake the training rule to abstain from misusing drinks and drugs that cause heedlessness. By the same token, I try to space my daily wine apart from Zazen meditation, the same for green tea, because I do recognize that even a glass could interfere in a small way. But that's a far cry from eliminating it from my diet. I also try not to eat heavy meals near the time, since the chemicals in foods can also affect meditation. It's all about moderation. Okay, that was all his response to my response. And I still think it sounds an awful lot like justifying his behavior. I'm not convinced about the medicinal benefits of alcohol. Yes, I know there have been lots of studies, but that all seems like justification to me also. Maybe it's just my own personal bias there. In which case, I'm not going to judge him for it. But as far as whether or not these precepts have been changed over the years because they're 2,500 years old and ancient, I don't believe that. Some stories do change and evolve over time. But from my training in this sort of thing, something that simple, something that basic, probably has not been changed. And he mentioned that these are suggestions and not commandments. Well, I disagree with that too in this case. I think those five precepts are as close to commandments as Buddhism gets. I don't think they're really open to discussion. Now, there's no great punishment if you fail in some of them, but you should at least be aiming for those goals. But, once again, this is my opinion. If following them causes suffering, then maybe it's not such a great thing. But I think the intention is that you should follow the precepts. Again, it's a very complicated subject. I would love to hear your opinions on this. I will put the links to all this discussion in the show notes for this episode. Please put in your comments. Everyone's got an opinion on this, and I'm not convinced that mine is absolutely right. I'm not convinced that his is absolutely wrong. Put in your opinion, see what everybody thinks. And next we move on to something a little bit lighter. Our koan for the week, Great Waves. In the early days of the Meiji era, there lived a well-known wrestler called Oname, Great Waves. Oname was immensely strong and knew the art of wrestling. In his private bouts, he defeated even his teacher, but in public, he was so bashful that his own pupils threw him. Oname felt he should go to a Zen master for help. Hakuju, a wandering teacher, was stopping in a little temple nearby, so Oname went to see him and told him of his trouble. "Great Waves is your name," the teacher advised. "So stay in this temple tonight. Imagine that you are those billows. You are no longer a wrestler who is afraid. You are those huge waves sweeping everything before them, swallowing all in their path. Do this, and you will be the greatest wrestler in the land." The teacher retired. Oname sat in meditation, trying to imagine himself as waves. He thought of many different things. Then gradually he turned more and more to the feeling of the waves. As the night advanced, the waves became larger and larger. They swept away the flowers and the vases. Even the Buddha in the shrine was inundated. Before long, the temple was nothing but the ebb and flow of an immense sea. In the morning, the teacher found Oname meditating, a faint smile on his face. He patted the wrestler's shoulder. "Now, nothing can disturb you," he said. "You are those waves. You will sweep everything before you." The same day, Oname entered the wrestling contests and won. After that, no one in Japan was able to defeat him. And next up is the Dhammapada for this week, Chapter 2, where the Dhammapada discusses earnestness. Chapter 2, on earnestness. Earnestness is the path of nirvana. Thoughtlessness, path of death. Those who are in earnest do not die. Those who are thoughtless are as if dead already. Those who are advanced in earnestness, having understood this clearly, delight in earnestness and rejoice in the knowledge of the elect. These wise people, meditative, steady, always possessed of strong powers, attain to nirvana, the highest happiness. If an earnest person has roused himself, if he is not forgetful, if his deeds are pure, if he acts with consideration, if he restrains himself and lives according to the law, then his glory will increase. By rousing himself, by earnestness, by restraint and control, the wise man may make for himself an island which no flood can overwhelm. Fools follow after vanity, men of evil wisdom. The wise man keeps earnestness as his best jewel. Follow not after vanity, nor after the enjoyment of love and lust. He who is earnest and meditative obtains ample joy. When the learned man drives away vanity by earnestness, he, the wise, climbing the terraced heights of wisdom, looks down upon the fools. Serene he looks upon the toiling crowd, as one that stands on a mountain looks down upon them that stand upon the plain. earnestness among the thoughtless, awake among the sleepers, the wise man advances like a racer, leaving behind the hack. By earnestness did Indra rise to the lordship of the gods. People praise earnestness. Thoughtlessness is always blamed. A mendicant who delights in earnestness, who looks with fear on thoughtlessness, moves about like fire, burning all his fetters, small or large. A mendicant who delights in reflection, who looks with fear on thoughtlessness, cannot fall away from his perfect state. He is close upon nirvana. And that's it for episode 18 of the Daily Buddhism. Stop in at the website, www.dailybuddhism.com. Sign up for our daily emailing list. Comment on the blog if you'd like. Download past shows. Everything is available online there at the website, all past shows. Purchase some CDs of the entire Dhammapada if you'd like. Donate. Stop in. Let us know you're here. Until then, see you next week.